Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, The Deep Dive, featuring your esteemed hosts, Andy Monitor and Drew Dimzik, powered by BetSports.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. Talking a little NFL today, Andy. But before we do that, I guess we could reflect a little bit on what has been a tough run of form for yours truly. Outside of the NBA, which round one went my way pretty much every way I could have hoped, and round two is going well so far. The big events really just not breaking in my favor. The Derby, the latest example of that. Spent a lot of time doing homework and content for the Derby.
Ultimately, how was the undercard? Like, I feel incredible. Like, yeah, I was going to say, incredible. I made money on, you know, I made money on every race leading. I did make money. Yeah. It's hard to make money. You know, in the end, it's like, you look at it, it's like, oh man, I hit the try. I hit a show bet. And then you look, it's like, well, I also bet so much money on this race.
Sure.
To do all the different combos, it's like, oh, I'm up like, you know, 4% ROI on this.
Yeah, race. Right.
But you're happy when you're up.
It was like that for every day, for all days, right? And actually, like, what was especially rough is that on my real exotics, which were pretty expensive, the horizontals, like, I had a first horizontal 1 through 5, race 4 blew me up. I had a horizontal 5 through 10, race 8 or 9, there was like a 40-1 shot that hit on the turf, and it was like, where in the hell did that come from? That blew up that horizontal, whereas all the other picks in my pick 5, my pick 6, all of them hit. And then race 11 ultimately had a bob. I had 11, a 5 over 11, and the bob by 5 was just magical. And that got me real liquid for the Derby, and I gave almost all of it back. So no superfecta this year. We try again next year. And ultimately, like, I mean, credit to Brian Hernandez and getting that golden rail ride with Torpedo Anna in the Oaks, and then backing it up with Mystic Dan in the Derby. Cannot believe he held on by the hair on his snout. That was a crazy
outcome. I was a horse away from the super. Sucked because I also, the fourth place horse, or it was the third place horse I didn't have, I believe. So I also, when you don't hit the super, you also don't hit the try when you make it that way. So
yes.
I pissed it all back away. Ended up, and more. I ended up down for the day because of that. So such is life. I had an enjoyable day. My saving grace was I was a little busy, so I didn't have time to sit and mash together a lot of verticals, pick 6, pick 3 stuff. So mostly just doing race by race stuff, which again was a little bit of a saving grace because it's a good way to take it a little easier. The NBA playoffs have been fun. My Wolves are suddenly, maybe no one saw this coming because they weren't a good team in years past who had the experience, you know, like we've talked about with some of the teams who've done it over and over where they mail it in for parts of the regular season because they need to crank it up to 110 when they get to the playoffs. But it's kind of what it feels like. Oh, there was like another level to this because the defense has just gotten even better, or maybe a lot of these teams just haven't faced this sort of defense game in, game out, 4 games in a row. So that's been a lot of fun. I might end up attending an NBA finals game. That's something I've never done. It'd be a lot of fun to go up to Minneapolis. Honestly, even just like the local reporters have just a laundry list of, like, here's all the bars Friday that are having huge watch parties in downtown Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. They're doing like a bunch of giveaways and stuff. It's like, here's where you want to go. And it's all the good bars. Mm-hmm. Like, God, I just want to go hang out up there.
Spoken like someone who did not stay up to watch OKC Mavs last night because you got a lot of basketball left before you start thinking about the finals, buddy. It is going to be Western Conference Finals is going to be a war.
That's what they really said about games. This series.
Did they? Who said that? Not us.
Everybody. Not me.
Not us.
Not me.
Real quick on the Derby before entirely moving off the Derby. They spent $200 million on Churchill Downs, and it shows. Like, 3 years ago when I went, the place was a dump. and it has gotten better every year, and they keep upgrading like key portions of it. I mean, credit to them, because it is a phenomenal experience now. A lot of cool stuff. Favorite celebrity sighting was Billy Walters. He was up in Millionaire Row hanging out with our guy, Adam Bjorn. They had some stories. I don't remember if I'm not going to tell their stories, but I think I sent you some of the news of what yeah. those guys were chatting about, which was amazing. And then worst celebrity sighting was I had two co-worst celebrity sightings. Clay Travis was there. And I got to tell you what, man, in person, not a very good looking guy. And he was also looking rough, like rough. I don't know what he was. That's up
bourbon to. Country.
He was deep into the bourbon late into the night by the looks of him on Saturday, because it was a hot day. Like once the sun came out, mm-hmm. it got real hot. And then on my Southwest flight, on the flight home, he had a boarding class. Mr. Senator Ted Cruz also made his way out to beautiful Kentucky. No athletes.
That would have been, God damn it. I should have waited on NBA. That would have been the good segue into the sweeping of the Suns. Ted Cruz
eliminated.
Yeah, Ted Cruz eliminated. Yeah, bourbon. It's on a bucket list, but that's not one of those ones you can like talk the wife into, like, sure. Hey, you know, it'd be a fun yeah. family trip with two young kids. What if we did the Bourbon Highway?
Hey, the Louisville Slugger Museum is there. That's interesting. But yeah, you're right. It's more of a
she wants to go to the beach. She wants to go to the cruise. That's more of a grown up.
As much as I love Louisville, those are better trips with the fam and the wife. You want it to boys trip. Like guy just gets divorced.
Yeah, he's getting like back on his feet. Golf bourbon trip.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the intensity this year with the security and everything was rough. But next year, if you want to come down, I think we can get you some inside look at the cool parts of Churchill Downs. If I even get invited back, we'll see. Hopefully I get invited back. I really, really had fun.
Yeah, I almost went up. So if you recall, I talked about going to Canterbury Downs, my local track.
Yes.
They were open. They did have a party. There's no live racing until the Preakness.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because I forgot. I'm like, oh, shit, it's still so early. It's not even like season yet. So I may go up for the Preakness.
Okay.
Just got to use it.
Yeah, don't need to comment much more on the NBA other than to say I kind of don't think any of these series are going to get to game six, which is like kind of hilarious for the NBA to be kind of – I don't know. They're going to have to move the round twos up. I mean, the conference finals up. I know that they're supposed to start 21st, 22nd, but there might not be much basketball on next week.
What if they might move those games up?
They're just going to have to move them up. They're going to move the finals up to probably 19-20. And then honestly, we could have no games on Friday and Saturday next week, which would be kind of a disaster. I think the series most likely to go six right now is probably Oklahoma City, but with the way Luka looked last night, injury wise, I don't know about that.
I was going to say if Luka's feeling better, and he and obviously Jokic, those guys can elevate a team. Those guys can win games on the road, even. So maybe we'll get some. You know, it's always we spoke too soon on this team or that team, but I mean, there's been a lot of that going around in the NBA playoffs outside of like the one fun series, which we had. Yeah. I guess we got our one fun series out of the way, which. Like you said, we'll probably have a very good Western Conference Finals. That should be a lot of fun. Eastern Conference Finals will be very fun for people selling commercials.
No, it'll be fun in general. You've been watching the Knicks games?
I have, but it's still
some fun games.
There's still there's a gap.
The Garden, Eastern Conference Finals in the Garden is going to be rocking.
There's still a gap. What's your number for Celtics hosting the
-600 on the series?
Yeah.
So not very likely.
And you were light. You've been light on those. You've been light on the favorites. You were light on what Denver would open at. I think you were under 200.
Yeah.
That opened much higher.
Yeah.
Obviously that's since shifted, but we came here to talk. We came here to talk NFL though. Yeah. And I've listened to some podcasts over the last, few days, weeks here and there. And a lot of it, you know what I fucking hate? And I just don't like reading about, don't like thinking about
the war in Gaza.
I know that's one of those things
on college campuses. What
I've
else?
I've had like 40.
There's a long list of tweets. Stuff I'm not really interested in hearing. Learning about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. What else are you
I've
not interested
so many
in?
Robert Kennedy ads. I've had a bunch Kennedy. Of tweets almost that I almost sent about like, but it's like, this is not something I need to. I just like, there's no like, you shouldn't take sides in some. Like, I understand taking sides. Look at me. This is my tweet that I shouldn't be sending out. But like, there's bad act. It's the same thing we have in any conflict for the most part. There's sure. bad actors on both sides, and nothing is, you know, binary. There's a lot of gray areas, and a lot of innocent people are taking it in the shorts over this. And there's a lot of bad stuff. So protest if you want. Like, go protest. That's your right.
Yeah, sure.
Bill of rights, baby.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of Bill of Rights, you should. I almost should find this text. Like, this is Andy being just an idiot. But my daughter got in trouble. This is the second time. She's about to lose her goddamn phone. She got in trouble for, she says her friend did it. It reposted a TikTok from her account because her friend was playing it. And the TikTok had some questionable content. Someone else told someone else, you know, telephone game. It got to a teacher. Teacher told the principal, and principal called my wife. So I get the call that my daughter got in trouble for something she posted on TikTok. It sent it a reposted. Sure. And I instantly start berating, like, not berating my wife, but like, I instantly start going in on like, is this guy out of his mind? He can't tell kids what to put. Like, he's going to get sued. It's like, does he not understand like civil liberties? Like, this is, and then as it turns out, he didn't tell her to, he's like, I can't tell you to delete anything. They just had like the talk about social media and reputation, you know, maybe you shouldn't do this sort of thing. So I'm like, all right. But yeah, like civil liberties, Andy, kicked into gear. And then obviously I was super mad at my daughter and we took her phone away for a few days.
Yes.
But it was just funny. I'm like,
yeah, you have the right to do whatever you want, but sometimes actions have consequences.
Yeah, my wife's like, yeah,
phone suspension included.
Right away here. Like, sorry.
Yes.
Sorry. It would be maddening being a teacher or a principal and administrator nowadays with the kids. So
I can only imagine doing with kids
at
all.
Not happy losing her phone.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little NFL. What we're going to do today is we're going to enough time.
True. Time out.
What? Yeah. What?
That whole diatribe was you interrupted with the Gaza stuff.
With the what?
What I don't like reading, writing, thinking. Draft grades.
Okay. Draft grades. Yes, you're right.
Much less serious than any conflicts across the world, but draft grades are the and I understand
right up there with them. With the war in Gaza.
It's content that people want. But it is the worst kind of prognosticating because you're guessing on not only one player that you've never seen play a single down in the NFL, but a whole group of them in possibly new schemes. There's new coaches. There's new, coordinators. There's other free agents that are backfilling. There's players you lost. You have no idea what their usage. You're just throwing grades out to, you know, either get clicks or appease, you know, if you're a writer for that team to kind of appease your audience. It's just the worst kind of content. I hate it. So I'd rather do it this way, the way we're going to get into this right now.
Of course. And I also I'm glad that we've given it a little bit of time since the draft, because I got to tell you what, on the day after the draft, you know what I didn't feel like talking about? The draft. It was a disaster for me. I really am just still in shambles because losing on an information market is just phenomenally embarrassing. And I lost in spades. Happy to kind of revisit it now with having given it a little space and having kind of cured some of my cold streak with some results in the NBA lately. So let's start there. The Falcons, I hate draft grades too, but the Falcons still get an F. Falcons just failed. It was a failure of process in every regard, particularly with the signing of Kirk Cousins. If you had any intention of doing this, I'm not exactly sure why you decided to give him that money, particularly in light of the fact that you didn't make an effort to try to go get Lamar Jackson last year, which would have been the draft capital you used on Bijan Robinson and Michael Penix. You know, you could have paid the Kirk Cousins money plus those that draft capital, and you would have the, you know, a guy who is in the running for an MVP, and it would have made you a perennial, you know, title contender in a, you know, a weakish NFC, particularly a weak NFC South. So just an absolute, loser organization. You said that, you said it right, Patrick. And I think, you know, like what I want the most out of the Falcons, just for the chaos that would ensue in the Takeosphere, is for Kirk Cousins to just kind of take his sweet time with his rehab, not really be ready to start the season, and Michael Penix plays and plays well in a good system with good weapons, and then they just end up sticking with him for this regular season, flushing $50 million entirely down the toilet. And then Kirk Cousins demands a trade in the offseason.
Denver did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it kind of feels like that's not crazy. But I would enjoy that if that's sort of the outcome of this, just for all the insanity that would ensue. But the reality
is, I don't want to belabor the Penix thing because it's been said many ways, but I feel like it might have been Anthony Amico that posted it, you know, the bell curve with the meme faces, the, you know, the smart guys on the tails and the idiot above it. That was, and he was using it to like describe the people trying to, I mean, they were really, really reaching for the people trying to like defend it. It's like, you are really, you know, you're really, I don't know. You're either trying to sound too smart or you're trying to work up something that isn't there. And I think Mina Kimes did a good job of like, just like, this doesn't have to be this complicated. This isn't a stupid pick. This isn't a dumb pick. If you didn't sign Kirk Cousins,
it's like a terrible process
a month ago. Like, the process of doing both of those things is just really, really puzzling. So it's not the same as the Jordan Love thing. It's not the same as the Mahomes thing where, you know, it's not something where those situations are, you know, Aaron Rodgers was entrenched there. He wasn't somebody they just signed for unprecedented money.
Yeah.
Mahomes was always going to be the plan at some point because they certainly didn't have like a, they were making the playoffs with Alex, but it wasn't,
you know,
like they had it solved.
Yeah. You know why else you shouldn't try to bend your brain into a pretzel trying to defend it? Because their commentary was fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. If we don't have to play him for 3 years, that's a good thing. Like, get fucked. Like, that's just ridiculous. Then you completely waste that capital, right? If you don't have to play him, then you could have used that capital on something in a window of Kirk Cousins that would have been able to get you closer to a championship, but you didn't. And so, you know, the best case scenario would be if Cousins doesn't play this year, Penix continues his arc of development and does well on a rookie deal for these guys, and they can get Kirk Cousins off the books. Like, that would be their best outcome, I think. And that's embarrassing.
Or Penix gets hurt like he has multiple times.
Yes.
While Kirk's on the sidelines.
Yeah. And honestly, like
Taylor Heineke.
My other kind of general, like in this exact kind of light, my other general takeaway from the draft was like the haves and the have nots right now across the NFL in terms of brain power and decision-making could not be more clear and could not be further apart. Like there are some organizations like the Carolina Panthers who finally did something smart hiring our friend, Dr. Eager, but late, who traded up for back in the second round and traded up one pick to take it.
They were just a little too late.
Right. But I honestly excited for what, you know, our friend of the pod, Eric Eager, does there. And hat tip. And honestly, hey, if you were going to buy low on a franchise, buying in on the Carolina Panthers right now, goddamn good investment. Like you just bought Bitcoin when it turbo nuked before the pandemic, you know, during the pandemic, and it got down to 3K. Like
that was a good point by you, Drew, in the DMs when we were talking. I said, you know, like you can't turn down an NFL job. Like I'm sure that's Eric's dream, and God bless him, but he deserves it. But it's like, of all the owners to work for, it's not. You know, it's not one of my favorites. I'm not going to speak for Eric, but then you said that, I'm like, that's a good point. Like, if you go work for Baltimore, who's already pretty high
up, well established
analytics department, who's already doing it. maybe you don't stand out, but if you can drag them out of the Stone Age, suddenly you're an assistant GM 4 years down the road with another franchise.
Yeah, right. The likelihood that Dave Tepper made his billions with his own decisions and not like listening to smart people he had hired and put in places, like it's definitely the latter. He was not like specifically picking investments. I'm sure he has a team of, you know, capable people he hired. He listened to them. And if that's sort of the way that this works out for Iger, then we're fine. You know, he will stock going straight up because he is bought low on a franchise right now. I can tell you that much. Yeah. The Panthers. Oh my God. And honestly, the NFC South in general, like, whew, P freaking you. And what else is weird is we have wild imbalance right now. Like, the NFC North is absolutely loaded. The AFC South is absolutely loaded. Like, all of these assets keep trickling into AFC these
North,
two.
Both Norths.
The AFC North is sort of like, although I have like a huge questions about Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Huge. All right.
Yeah.
Like, they and
but the they have high potential.
High potential, but huge questions. And then you have like the AFC South and maybe see the AFC East. Now looks real, real sucky. The AFC West outside of the Chiefs is a big bunch of what? The NFC South, we said, and the NFC East all of a sudden looks pretty goddamn terrible. So I'm like kind of blown away with how there's huge imbalance between these conferences, and it's going to make schedule and who you match up against is going to be hugely important this year to kind of synthesize that quickly and get on win totals if you're going to play win totals, I think. So what are you laughing about?
Have you seen the video of Jokic getting like finding out he won the MVP?
No, is it classic?
they're watching like TNT and they pan to him and he's like, eh. He does not give a shit about that. He just wants to race. There's a big horse race this weekend.
I love it. I love it.
All right, let's rapid fire through some QBs.
Yeah, let's go through. Yeah, so okay, set this up. We're gonna go through position QB, and we're gonna kind of talk about who could make an immediate impact out of the QBs. So then we're gonna move to wide receivers. Then we're gonna move to other offensive players, which is running back, tight end, O line, and then we'll move to defense. And we're gonna try to be pretty quick on all this stuff. So let's go with QB first. Caleb Williams will be what, Andy? Like, I guess QB, he's going to be QB what for you as far as a rating to start the season?
Like, the offensive rookie of the year market might just suck because you don't end up with a high-end talent like this landing in a position where he has, like, three good wide receivers, an up-and-coming offensive line, probably some decent running backs. He has a good tight end. I think they have the right staff there right now at least to get a bunch out of him. So it might be a really boring, like, offensive rookie. I'm going to make cases for long shots all year long. I'm going to bet into some terrible long shots for sure. But man, he should succeed. And you know, people kind of look back at maybe his senior season or whatever you want to call it there, the last season there at USC,
final college year.
It wasn't as great, you know. Yeah. But we've seen the tape. We've seen what he's done. And see, that was kind of a weird USC team. I think you getting to a little bit of a getting into an NFL playbook with the options he has.
Yeah,
he should be fucking fine.
Yeah, little worried about the intangibles off field stuff. The kind of the rumor mill around his experience at USC was some of the limited playbook there was less about the system and more about him kind of dictating what he wanted to do, which is weird. But the step up in talent and protection from USC to Chicago is massive.
When it was different after they lost Addison.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He was a different offense.
Yeah. He didn't have much going for him. But whatever the case was, there was supposedly a lot of his fingerprints on what they were doing. So I don't love that. And don't in general love some of the, you know, kind of discourse around his, his makeup. He doesn't seem like a CJ Stroud, get the guys in the room fired up in May kind of guy, but we'll see. I would say cautious, high optimism for what he's going to do in this system with those weapons, with this protection, high optimism of what the, you know, kind of relationship is going to be like with the new offensive coordinator there. So, nothing to doubt. He's going to be a factor this year and that the Bears are going to kind of be on the fringes of the playoffs, if not squarely in. Yeah. How about QB2?
Drafted?
Yeah, QB2, Jaden Daniels.
not as much to work with, but it is a true overhaul. You've got some decent minds there on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
I didn't love the coaching hire. I'm not sure I love the offensive coordinator hire. I'm really, I'm tepid on this one.
Yeah.
I think he has the, you know, I think he has the skills. I think he has the, like you said, he can kind of do it all. But I also run into the weird chicken and egg with Neighbors and Thomas and him. Like, did, you know, I just talk about Addison being such a big part of, you know, 2 years ago for Caleb. Like, were those receivers good? Was it the quarterback that made them good? Were the, you know, the quarterback look a lot better because he had the receivers? Was it a, it was probably a combo of all of it plus the coaching. But at the same time, it's going to get a little tougher without having those two guys.
Yeah, you know, it is.
It's not the situation you're stepping to in Chicago, and I'm kind of out on the coaching staff. So
yeah, you didn't even mention protection, which is the biggest issue for Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels' sack pressure to sack ratio is problematic, and he had good protection and he scrambled his ass off at LSU, which is weird. So that's not a good sign. And I think I have high bust potential here, considering the Cliff Kingsbury situation and the offensive line in Washington. It is a downgrade in weapons from what you had, I think. You know, Terry McLaurin, I would say, is a standout player, but not like clearly better than Malik Neighbors. Jaden Daniels does have mobility to go, you know, to kind of help him bridge the learning gap of learning how to play at the NFL level. But I will, I kind of will believe it when I see it, that it'll work in a Cliff Kingsbury system and it'll work with this protection, because he looks like a guy that's going to be under duress early and often. And if the game's moving too fast for him, I think bust potential this season is in the cards. So moving on to Drake May, bust potential is pretty high here just because it's a really bad team. I know that they invested a shit ton of their draft capital to try to give him something to work with from a weapon standpoint. But as we sit here today, the New England Patriots are, you know, this has a lot of the fingerprints of like what I wouldn't say it was. Actually, maybe it is as bad. This feels like, you know, Justin Fields' tenure starting in Chicago type of bad, where, you know, your offensive line includes Caden Wallace, City Sow, and Mike Onwenu. David Andrews is good, but he's getting up there. Cole Strange is a question mark in terms of availability. And then your wide receivers are Jalen Polk, Kendrick Bourne, DeMario Douglas, KJ Osborne, Javon Baker, Juju Smith-Schuster, Keyshawn Boutte, Jalen Rager. Stop me when you've heard of anyone better than wide receiver three.
I do want to, I'll disagree with you here a little. And this is not a strong take. This is not something I'm very committed to. But I like Alex Van Pelt. Strictly from what he dealt with over the last couple of years, where he did a lot of, you know, the old making chicken salad out of chicken shit, and especially what he had to deal with at a variety of very important positions, especially, you know, the injuries we saw, quarterback, running back, the, you know, inconsistency at wide receiver. It doesn't make any of those guys better, but I mean, KJ Osborne isn't a bad player. We saw flashes from Douglas, Kendrick Bourne, Rager, and Osborne, Smith-Schuster, castoffs from other teams. If he can, he doesn't have to get all those guys to hit. He just has to get one of those guys to play at like wide receiver two level.
Yeah, right now,
because you have Hunter Henry, you have good tight ends. You have decent running back room. It's not going to be a good team. Like, this team is not going to be good this year. I'm just saying, like, I think they can, if Van Pelt works out as an offensive coordinator, they can be on the upslope. And I think at the end of the year, we can be like, hey, this team won 6 games, but we saw some things from this offense. We saw some things from Drake May. This is a team that we can buy into next year if they can add some pieces. And they're kind of like, you know, they're in a rebuild though. So they have a bunch of wide receiver threes.
They have some very tough decisions about whether he even starts week one.
I don't hate starting Brissett, but I'm from the school of let's find out what the fuck we got.
I know it, but at the same time, like, it could go bad way. It could go bad. Your starting left tackle is a third round rookie. Does that feel good?
I think you're correct. And I feel like they probably don't make that decision until like through camp and preseason, where it's like we find out like, hey, is this guy ready? Is this team ready to play around him? I think it's probably up in the air.
Okay. Because yeah, you right now your starting X is a second round wide receiver. Your starting left tackle is a third round rookie. Second round rookie and a third round rookie.
You kind of need Jill and Polk to hit.
You need Polk to hit. You need Wallace to hit. And you need something else. So I don't expect Joe Milton to get to an NFL level, although Bailey Zappi probably not going to have a job this year, I wouldn't guess.
Six wins does seem aggressive, but
the fourth quarterback drafted was Michael Penix Jr., not AJ McCarthy.
Ideally, he doesn't play. If you want the Falcons to be good, ideally, he does not play football this year.
I disagree. Ideally, I think the best thing for the Falcons is him playing.
Probably long-term. I mean, you're correct. Yeah. But in this season, this year, you don't want him starting. You want Kirk Cousins healthy into camp. Okay. You want him starting week one, playing within this offense, doing what he's done over the last couple of years. He's not a big he's not going to get super creative. He's not going to do a lot of stuff out in space, but he's a good pocket passer, and there's enough weapons there, and he's a better quarterback than Penix. Like, ideally, you win this division, you win one playoff game, get fucking smoked by one of the good teams in the second round, and you call it a better year than last year.
Yuck. 11-0 run for the Pacers. I know it's the first quarter, but that was stupid. Knicks playing with their food. All right. J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota. Probably redshirting behind Sam Darnold. Probably. Unless he really wows in camp, I suppose. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. And it depends what Darnold does, too. He's been very inconsistent in his random stops along the way since his first, his first stint there in New York. So this is another one, too, where it's not like Drake May, where it's like, oh, shit, this is a bad offensive line. Should we even put him back there? It's a really good offensive line with two great tackles, good interior play, a true wide receiver one, a really good wide receiver two, a good tight end. Running backs don't matter. And the defense is on the come up. This is a team that's in a weird spot, too, because are they win now? Like you mentioned, it's such a good division. It's very it's going to be probably four ways competitive if the Bears ramp up quickly. So I don't know what the decision is going to look like there. I think from the standpoint of find out what you have, I'd play him right away.
Yeah,
like you know what you have in Darnold. I don't think anyone in the building is like convinced, hey, we can fix Sam Darnold. We can get a playoff run out of this guy. I think it's definitely just always been a bridge, always been a placeholder. And what if the draft doesn't go right? What if we don't get any of the guys? What if we're trading up to get Spencer Rattler in the fourth round or whatever? What if we have to start somebody? So yeah. I think that was the move there. Darnold was cheap enough.
Yeah. Okay. Bo Nix is in the same boat as Drake May, where we don't really know if he will get the start week one. He probably shouldn't get the start week one, and the Denver Broncos are in deep trouble in terms of having a roster that's ready to compete this year. I will say that he is maybe a little bit better off in that. Yeah, if you're warm on Alex Van Pelt, you should be kind of hot on Sean Payton, I would assume, although Joe Lombardi is the OC there. Did you know that?
Yeah, I'm not keen on the coaching. I'm not going to go say like the game is past Sean Payton by. I think him as like the decision maker hasn't looked good so far. Mm-hmm. Granted, he came into I will give him the benefit of the doubt. He came into a weird situation with a really weird contract that was not working out at one of the most important positions. It's not quite the Patriots. This is a bad roster, but like Cortland Sutton, Marvin Mims, Josh Reynolds, Tim Patrick, Philip Dorsett even, who's a little further down there's some names here that can work out. They have a couple decent offensive linemen, but it's not like something I'm going to be excited about, especially in this division, which to be fair, I guess a couple of the other teams in this division aren't looking all that well either. So I don't know, is there a big difference at the end of the year whether you started Stidham, Zach Wilson, or Bo Nix? Probably not. This is a team in full rebuild. Again, I think if you're comfortable putting him, if he knows the playbook, go out there and find out, because you know what you have in Stidham, you know what you have in Wilson. Wilson looked a little better at times when he had to fill in last year, though, so maybe they've bought into that a little more than they should.
Yeah, okay. All right. I don't hate that call. I'm not expecting Bo Nix to be an impact this year, really, because I think this team is going to be behind a lot. I think he's going to be under duress a lot. And if this is just the same, I think they're going to end up defaulting into what the Russell Wilson offense looked like, which was just dump off, short stuff, really conservative, you know, march down the field type of offense. It's just not how you can sustain in today's NFL. So I don't think I honestly don't think it'll work this year, and it might not work at all. We shall see. A lot of holes on that roster. Just really an incomplete team. Any other quarterbacks you want to make any kind of commentary on? Spencer Rattler, you got an opinion of fifth round pick Spencer Rattler? Saints finally draft a quarterback.
I mean, that's where you want to take a quarterback, especially somebody kind of came highly recruited. He was a name. He was a guy that was talked about pretty highly while he was, you know, certain parts of his college career. Some character issues, apparently, but fuck, you need some cockiness if you're going to play quarterback at the highest level. Find out, like, that wasn't a bad punt by them at all.
Okay. All right, sounds good. Pacers are getting such a favorable whistle here. Wide receiver, you want to do the same thing, top to bottom? Who can make an immediate impact?
Yeah, I think so. We just there's a bunch of names. I guess we don't want to talk Devin Leary at all. we'll name the other quarterbacks, Jordan Travis, Joe Milton, Devin Leary, Michael Pratt from Tulane is a Packers backup now.
Those if we see any of those guys, something's gone terribly wrong for those something. Teams.
If Joe Milton starts for the Patriots, something is going horribly awry.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Ravens. You don't need Devin Leary. Some of those guys don't make it out of camp, obviously.
Yeah. Wide receiver one, Marvin Harrison Jr. is wide receiver one out of this class, from what I can tell. And I would expect a pretty impressive immediate impact from him because, he's a true blue. He's a true blue X. He's going to be your leading target getter for this offense, I would expect. The other wide receivers are Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch. Tight end is Trey McBride, and then there's not a ton of depth. So Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to potentially get the – I'm trying to think of the last time we had this in terms of being the guy as far as a wide receiver who was taken at the top of the draft and immediately just given a ton of targets. But this could – he could set rookie receiving records, and I don't think we would be surprised. Do you agree?
He should have a massive year. He's just very good. I don't even want to get too into it. It's just
what does he have to do stat wise? Let's pretend Caleb Williams wins nine games or more, and the Bears are flirting with, if not make the bottom of the playoffs. What does Marvin Harrison have to do statistically to beat out Caleb Williams?
I mean, break all the wide receiver records, not just rookie, but like. The NFL receiver, like 2,000-yard, 20-touchdown season. It's so hard to overcome a quarterback, especially a quarterback who, the narratives around Caleb fixing the Bears. And the Bears, that's the thing. It's not even going to be a huge jump in wins if they win like 9, 10, 11 games. But if they're, if they win the division, if they make the playoffs even, and he plays well, it's going to be a lot to overtake.
Yeah.
That is the main thing about, like, if you go look at the, and granted, maybe not a good example because what CJ Stroud ended up doing was pretty fucking good. Like, I don't think we should take anything away from what he did. But, if you go look at, you go look at the voting for Offensive Rookie of the Year, like Puka Nacua had, how many yards? He had it was like 900 yards. You got like two votes out of the 50.
Like, no, less nobody, pedigree, nobody, like less name brand.
I know it doesn't, he didn't come in, but I mean, he was a huge story throughout the year.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
CJ Stroud hit a higher. I mean, if Caleb Williams hits CJ Stroud's level, no one's beating him.
He had I'm looking at Laporta. I'm like, why is that number wrong? 1,486 receiving yards for Nacua. 105 catches. 100. Can you imagine a rookie having 105 catches last year? Yeah, excuse me, Luke. I was looking at immediately when I said that, it bothered me. But 105 catches, 1,486, and 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, he was like, fourth overall, ninth overall in receptions, fourth overall in receiving yards. He had an all-pro season.
I think you have to have like 2,000 yards or do something crazy.
Well, I mean, the problem was CJ was so good that if Caleb Williams hits CJ Stroud type of success, then forget about it. Like, it's over. I'm assuming Caleb is not capable of hitting that high, but maybe he is. We'll see. All right, so Marvin Harrison probably rightfully in the conversation among the wide receivers we expect to make a impact immediately.
Yeah, but just his price sucks.
Yeah, I'm cooler on these next two, Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze, just because number one, the Giants have a quarterback problem, and number two, the Bears have a glut of targets now potentially, and a rookie quarterback. So, you know, it may take a little while for these guys to be impact position players at the NFL level, and I don't think we should be surprised, and I don't think we should expect it. If they do especially well, I think you should, you know, just you take it, and you're happy with that, and you move on.
I'm a little cooler on the Giants quarterback issue stuff. I've seen Daniel Jones play pretty well. You know, it's been injuries and a lot of what he's dealt with, just not having a good wide receiver room for a good portion of his career. So I don't think Daniel Jones is going to come around and be, you know, the guy. I don't think we're like, oh, he's a top five quarterback now, but I think he's good enough. And having a good receiver will make a big difference.
Do you think he's going to be healthy enough to play week one?
We'll find out what the health is the big issue there. So, and obviously if he's not healthy, things get a lot sketchier for Nabers.
You know, there's been a lot of rumbling that it's Drew Locke.
Yeah. That's the thing too, with the contract. If they end up like he's not ready and they want to just stretch that out and kind of punt on the season, then they don't have to pay him. They can do some funny.
What a disaster for Giants.
Yeah, it's kind of a bad contract if things turn out that way. Odunze, same thing you said. Like, no chance to win Rookie of the Year because if he does well,
0.0.
Caleb's doing well, so don't. If you're betting on Rome Odunze to win Rookie of the Year, you're betting on
Caleb Williams getting hurt.
Yeah, him being the best wide receiver in this entire, you know, draft, outplaying DJ Moore, probably in Keenan Allen, while getting the ball thrown to him by like Brett Rippin.
Tyson Badgett,
you know, somebody else.
You're hoping he's Tyson Badgett's favorite target. That's what you're hoping. I don't think you should count on that.
But I mean, but from like a macro standpoint, like he should be good. He should be fine. Like you said, it wasn't we talk about the Bears being like a good offense, but for stats, for counting stats, maybe not the best landing spot for a youngster like that with two, you know, pedigreed wide receivers ahead of him. Although stranger things have happened. We were very keen on Chris Carter, Hall of Famer, and you know, underrated Jake Reed, a very good number two for years and years and years. And sure, Randy Moss was your third wide receiver on that team that year.
Yeah.
I mean, things happen. Things can happen in a hurry when somebody.
Hey, I mean, last year Jordan Addison was the beneficiary of Justin Jefferson getting hurt, and obviously that's not a perfect corollary to DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, but it could happen. But Caleb Williams cock blocking him for Oroy is real. All right, so from there you get to Brian Thomas Jr., who was picked 23 to the Jags. The Jags needed a weapon. I think that was a very fair pick. They lost both Zay Jones and Calvin Ridley in free agency, and so it is going to be the Christian Kirk, Brian Thomas, Gabe Davis wide receiver room there. And Brian Thomas should fit in well, but I think again fits very cleanly into just role player as far as like primary target getter, right?
He should be your two. Like he can be your two. Like you signed Gabe Davis to be your one. But he has size like some of the other guys we'll talk about, except he's also fast. So he's got the size and the speed. Does need to improve as a route runner. He was one of the guys. I put him on the thumbnail for this. He's one of the guys I like because of, you know, you have the way that Trevor plays football, the way that Trevor will slang it a little, maybe make some, have a couple margaritas, make some bad decisions, but like he's going to get opportunities. I saw somebody compare him to Christian Watson, which I liked a lot. I thought that was a good comp. Mm-hmm. Obviously Christian Watson is a very good player when he's healthy, but this is a guy that you can put him outside. You can put him at the X. He's been great against press. He's got quickness. He can move. Again, none of these guys, you never hear this like, oh, he's just a, you know, he's route running at an NFL level. Like, that's so rare. They all have to improve their route running, but he just has so much acceleration. And, like, you know, the scouts, they talk about hips, they talk about ball tracking, wide catch radius, like everything they talk about, they listed with him. Like, he's fast, and I think he's good enough. And, you know, I've seen several scouts talk about decent plus run blocker as well. So just keeping on the field is such a big part of gathering stats, becoming part of the offensive rookie of the year conversation, or just, you know, if you're betting into these over under markets on their total stats. I like him to, you know, maybe even push Davis to be the one there if he works out, because he has a lot, just a lot of size and speed, and they need, it's like a need. It's, you lose your essentially your two top receivers. You need him.
Yeah. You're still gonna bleed a shitload of targets to Travis Etienne in that offense. And the tight end is the target as well. So a lot of mouths to feed. But you know what else? I like your breakdown though. I'll ride some Brian Thomas enthusiasm into the season. I think the one other thing he really has going for him, Andy, the secondaries in the AFC South are the one weak spot. Tennessee, Indy, and Houston all have some big old question marks in their secondaries. As if any of those three teams has like a real spot that you're like, I don't know about them, it's the secondary for all three. So the Jags receiving core should be able to, you know, find something good, get something good going, unlike the Knicks, who can go fuck themselves tonight.
Who's up next?
Xavier Worthy, who is going to be catching passes from Football Jesus in Kansas City.
Isn't that the whole argument? Like,
yeah.
Hey, your other good young receiver might be in prison, and you have Mahomes on your team, and you're the fastest person ever. Andy Reid going back to Philly. I mean, just go pull out those old notebooks, playbooks. Find the DeSean Jackson package, find the Tyreek Hill package, put it back in the playbook, let the boy run, and sling him the ball.
Is there a knock on him being able to catch the ball? Like, why wasn't he a higher pick if he was that fast? I feel like there's something.
He ain't big.
He's like, not big. It's size. There's no knock on him. There's no knock on his hands. It's more like
people technical try to beat the knock. I think it's. I think he's fine.
Okay.
Not only that, but they maybe a little bit of a bump for him, and this is something we have to start looking at going forward, is the new kickoff rule. I think he might return kicks and punts. He's kind of a returner too, and Veach said that about him, that we want to use him on special teams. Like, maybe that's what gets a receiver over the hump this year, is they return kicks and have like three touchdowns, because I think we're going to see an uptick in touchdowns on kick returns this year. Guy breaks through that coverage, and suddenly he's just gone. So it'll be a ton of fun if he is truly integrating into this offense well. And I mean, there was rumors this was Pat's pick too. Pat wanted him. Andy said good things.
I don't love letting your players make these picks, even if it's the best player.
I think it's one of those things where they don't say it until it comes true, where like, if Pat Mahomes really wanted Brian Thomas Jr. and said it and they didn't get him, they never leak that. But if Pat Mahomes, like, I don't think they just were drafting who Pat wants. But after the fact, they'll be like, well, Pat liked this guy. Yeah, Pat did pick Yes. He did like thank CEH. You, Luke.
Yes.
Small so
he's
sample.
Due. He's due for a he's due. He's
small
due.
Sample. He's due.
All right. So the rest of the wide receivers in round
I'm
one.
Stunned. Mahomes didn't want to pick a defensive player.
Too. Yeah, right. Niners, third pick 31, took Ricky Pearsall. Those motherfuckers, they could have waited to round three. Ricky Pearsall was not a hot commodity in this draft. And they also took that without even trading Debo or Brandon Ayuk. So I don't know what the big urgency was to address the wide receiver position. Lots of other holes on that roster.
Matt Harmon had a good little video about him. Just their wide receivers were struggling against man coverage in the Super Bowl. You know, and he said, you know, he's great against man coverage. Ricky Pearsall.
You guess.
I don't have strong opinions on him. I think
you could have used the pick in the 60s on him.
There were teams that were eyeing him early in the second.
Okay.
So I agree. I think it was a bit of a reach, but I mean, the take is he's going to be fine because it's a good offense.
Okay. The Panthers, weirdly, still not exactly sure why, traded up from 33 to 32 to take Xavier Leggett. Okay. Doesn't move the needle for me really at all, but they need wide receiver help badly. They have Deontay Johnson and Leggett now. So congratulations. You went from the 32nd best wide receiver room in football last year to the 30th. I don't know. I don't think I just don't know what to make of this team right now until we see what Dave Canales has in store for this offense. I think this is just to, you know, let this develop before making any type of judgment. I think
it's going to be hard to evaluate him because I think it's going to be a bad offense. There were rumors the Patriots wanted him and they needed to move to get him. I don't know. Those sort of rumors fly around after every draft. So DK Metcalf comps maybe, but certainly this isn't the offense to get that out of him. We'll find out what we get with the new coaching staff, the new regime here. I don't have strong opinions one way or the other just because I don't think the team's going to be very good.
Okay. Bill's interesting here. They traded out of the Xavier Worthy pick. They traded out of the Xavier Leggett pick, and they took Keon Coleman with the first pick of the second round. That was telegraphed everywhere. I got no money down on that. So the only actual info I had of the entire draft cycle, I made no money on. So wonderful. The Keon Coleman opportunity is going to be monumental. This wide receiver room desperately needed this type of player. And he fills and he's an immediate slot and play as your X. Whether he will succeed kind of depends on his ability to mature quickly in terms of beating coverage and getting separation. I think that's probably his weakness. But with the ball in his hands, he seems like an elite playmaker. So I'm gonna have cautious optimism that Keon Coleman is a factor this year for the Bills in their attempt to keep the Jets from succeeding in the AFC East.
Yeah, this is another one of those bell curve ones where it's like both guys are just saying someone has to catch the ball. And then the top guy is explaining, you know, the intricacies of the NFL defense against the Bills. But someone does have to catch the ball. And yeah, they're going to mash him in the X right away. When you do that, that means you trust somebody to beat press coverage. Because that guy who's the split end, who's out on that side, is going to face a lot of press coverage. And like you said, yes, separation is probably some of his weakness, but he's just got a huge body. He's able to box out guys, and 50-50 balls aren't really 50-50 balls when you're able to do that sort of thing. So big catch radius, big body. He has the weight to do it. Josh don't mind throwing some 50-50 balls. Like, I think it's actually a really, really good landing spot for probably a lot of wide receivers just because of the vacated targets and the fact that, you know, you need somebody to step in. But again, I guess, you know, that gauntlet drill that we talked about during the combine where his top speed was faster than anybody, even though he kind of fell a little due to his 40 speed. He was dead last in the group, but then when they did all the stuff and, you know, they have the next gen stats tracking these guys when they're going through the receiver drills, like they're just running routes for all the quarterbacks. And when he ran a go route, he was the second fastest guy. So I don't know if there's just something like, hey, I'm not any good at starting out of a track stance. Like several people have made that comment. Like, yeah, he's just shitty at getting going out of a track stance. Whereas you get him on a football field and have him run a go route, he was the second fastest person out there. He was the second fastest in the slot. He was third fastest running a slant. This is all from the next gen stats stuff earlier in the draft cycle here. So he's fast. He plays faster than, you know, what his 40 speed looks like. And a lot of that is getting in and out of breaks. And, you know, again, all these young guys are going to get dogged on a little for their route running. But if you have a guy who's that fast and gets out of his breaks like that, he's going to be fine. So
okay.
What was it? I wrote this down. 608 catches, 8,000 yards, 64 touchdowns. That's what Diggs and Davis did while they were
vacated. Okay.
Not just 1 year. It's not just 1 year.
Yeah, that's their actually, time.
That'd be a record.
Yeah, but, surely. Okay, so let's keep cooking here.
So much opportunity. I like him a lot.
Yeah, same. Speaking of opportunity, the Los Angeles Chargers elected to use their top draft capital instead of taking Malik Nabers. They took an offensive tackle. Did not love. And do not love the kind of telegraphing of what their philosophy is going to be this year, considering you have a young Justin Herbert in your back, you know, in your pocket. Ladd McConkey, perfectly fine pick. I don't know. Was he overdrafted? Maybe. This is exactly the right spot for him? Maybe. He's probably going to play the slot. There's a chance he's your, you know, there's a chance he could lead the rookie receivers, and you shouldn't be shocked, because there is, again, like, an elite quarterback with a complete and total vacation of target opportunities here. But just looking at the Chargers depth chart right now, I'm just completely unmoved. Like, this looks rough.
And even though the roster looks like it looks, and you have a good young quarterback, and you have basically the entire Baltimore 2022, you know, backfield, like, and there's been some injuries there, it does sound like it's going to be a run-heavy, run-first kind of offense. So I think he gets a lot of opportunity, a lot of catches. It's not, a run-first offense isn't running the ball 60% of the time. You know, you're still going to throw plenty, and there's so much opportunity with the vacated targets from Williams and Allen. But I don't know. It's a weird makeup. It's a weird roster, and I worry about what Harbaugh and Roman are going to put together. So I'm thinking he's going to have a lot of stats, but not going to be impressing people.
I thought Jalen Brunson was just getting his freaking foot wrapped, you know, his ankle wrapped or whatever. This is a foot injury. He's now questionable to return. All right, my next plays.
Oh, they're calling it Liz Frank. I think he's out for the year.
Are you joking?
I made that up.
Okay. Well, I'm not watching, obviously. So fuck.
Not either.
Bummer. God,
why would you think I'd be watching the Knicks?
Well, I thought maybe you saw a different tweet than I saw. That's bad.
Real quick, and stop me if you have any opinions on these, but like Jalen Polk, we already talked about. He's probably a good receiver. He landed in a shitty situation. A.D. Mitchell landed in probably a good situation.
Yeah.
It depends how Anthony Richardson comes back and looks, but that's a nice spot for him.
Surely.
Some people had mocked him in the first round. Corley is probably a good situation. That room's a little crowded, but he's going to get in rotationally, and that probably should be a good offense. Same thing with Burton going to the Bengals, the receiver from Bama. I saw people mock him in the second round at some points. Like, that's a spot where it's crowded, but he can, you know, he can play in a good offense. I think that's kind of what you get with some of these mid-round guys. Troy Franklin dropped off the face of the earth, and I was excited for him to land somewhere good, but again, Denver.
So, with Bo Nix, yeah.
Bo Nix, Troy Franklin. I guess at least they know each other.
Yeah, they're buddies. Okay, that sounds about it for me in terms of wide receiver commentary, and I guess we should add commentary.
Yeah, I'll save the deep sleepers for, you know, like June when I run out of stuff to do.
Yeah. Let's talk about the one tight end who matters in Brock Bowers and ask ourselves, Las Vegas Raiders, did you really have the roster that could afford a luxury pick like Brock Bowers?
It was like your 11th highest need.
I think the answer is a no. And I have zero clue why they would swing for the fences on a guy like this at pick 13. this feels like they wanted the quarterback that got taken right ahead of them or something. And they were like, what do we do? I don't know. Their clock's running out. Put the card in. Who's the top guy on our board? Brock Bowers, go. That's kind of like the feeling I got watching. Cause I was like, they drafted Mayer last year. They don't really need pass catchers. Like they need a cornerback so badly. No one's taken one. They could use offensive tackle. There's elite tackles. What are we doing? I did not get it. I do not like it. And I think it is going to be a bummer that a potentially game-breaking difference maker in the receiving department lands in that position. So we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, my take on Bowers pre-draft was I'm not going to begrudge any team if they take him and they don't need him, if he falls to them, because his upside is, you know, Kelsey-ish. His sure. upside is a star player for 10 plus years who really moves the needle on the offense. I said I wouldn't do it, and here I am doing it anyway, because again, it was like the one team where this is such a low need for you. Mm-hmm. I get it. That had to be the conversation. Like, oh, we just can't pass on a talent like this. Okay. Fuck it. Are we winning this year anyway? We have Gardner Minshew starting, guys.
Is there any offensive tackle running back who changes a team rating for you who was drafted in on day one or two?
I don't know if there'll ever be a running back again, man, that like changes the landscape of a team's path. Again, like your top running back was Brooks to the Panthers. That's not going to be a good team. Benson, Cardinals, maybe some improvements there, but that's not going to be a good team. Corum's a fun one because I like the quarterback. I like the coach. But that's one where they're fine mixing and matching and using whoever's hot hand, whoever's healthy. So, I mean, Jalen Wright is the one that sticks out, obviously, as a – like why did you do this? And I guess it was in the fourth round, so fuck it. But like, just drafted another super fast guy. Just like they just keep drafting the same players. So I'm interested to see what they decide to do with that running back room in Miami. That could be fun. Will Shipley was always a guy I liked. I guess you know him and the Notre Dame running back dropped a little too. Again. Notre Dame running back ended up in Denver, not a great spot, but Will Shipley is somebody that, I mean, the Eagles just take whoever and make him into a good running back with their scheme and their blocking and their coaching. So maybe somebody to keep an eye on, but yeah, nothing I'm super excited about. As far as offensive tackles, like Joe Alt's going to be great, but you know, the makeup of that team and the fact that they're going to be run first and probably misusing their quarterback at this point is kind of rough. The Titans probably got a pretty good player too, but that's still a tough roster. We talked about this pre-draft, the Jets, you know, you might not start Fashanu, but what else are you going to do? You got an extra pick out of Minnesota in that spot. You got a really good tackle. You got a guy you could move around. Like I can't begrudge them either. Saints had to take a tackle. Bengals kind of did too. They got a good one, I think, in Mims, just a huge body. Steelers were always going to go offensive line. Fatano was mocked to the Seattle in like everybody's mock for 2 months. So I think probably a good pickup for them. I was surprised the Packers went tackle instead of interior with some of the guys left on the board, but Jordan Morgan, don't know much about him. Packers need help. Obviously, Bakhtiari's done and some of the interior help they need too. They're going to have to shuffle some guys around. I don't know who we're missing. Kingsley Suamataya for the Chiefs. That guy might start. You know, he might end up starting for the Chiefs as a tackle. They can use help up front.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look who else
we Roger got. Rosengarten may start.
Yeah, Rosengarten for Baltimore. He might end up starting. Honestly, Patrick Paul, Miami, the kid from Houston.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was a definite need. Dallas, Tyler Guyton, that was a huge need. It felt like the tackles for the most part ended up in the right teams.
Oh yeah,
a lot of them ended up in spots where it's the opposite of what we said with Blake Bowers. Like, oh, come here, we need
you. Yeah, it was a good hand and glove for a lot of good those home. Guys. And if good they, home they, for those they, guys. They're not going to change your rating on a team, but they're not going to make you think that a team has a low floor. with.
And by all means, guys, if there is somebody in the fifth round, any of these positions that you like because you're a fan of that college, or you get to see him play more, you just love the fit and we missed him, drop them in the comments. I'd love to hear it, because honestly, some of the best nuggets are not from NFL writers and articles, they're from you guys. So definitely love to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the first defensive player, Andy, in the draft went off the board and picked 15 to the Indianapolis Colts. They took Latu from UCLA. Even that didn't totally jive with like what I understood there needs to be, but okay. They get an elite pass rusher, I suppose, if he can stay healthy. Murphy goes second defensive player to Seattle. Vikings trade up to get Dallas Turner, which feels like a lot for an end, but he could be elite. Yeah, and then the Rams take Jared Verse, so they kind of at least do address D-line after losing Aaron Donald. Chop Robinson goes to the Dolphins. And then you had, finally, pick 22, the Eagles get CB1 somehow. Their biggest need coming into this cycle was cornerback, and I thought maybe they were going to have to give up assets to get an elite guy, but they got their pick.
Crazy how it fell to them.
Which is crazy. And then they got another really good player in round two somehow, which is like amazing. Their second pick was Cooper DeJean, pick 40, who was expected to be a top round talent. So now they've literally solved the James Bradbury problem, and they have a slot corner that are rookies. Like, this defense could be amazingly improved.
Everyone's worried about Bradbury and Slay, and then two first round corner prospects just dropped you.
I think Slay probably still has some juice, but Bradbury,
he does, but it's not forever. Like that's start thinking about it kind of age.
Just bang, bang, gift, gift. Like really, really, really solid job by the Eagles of not doing something stupid and giving up assets, just getting to pick your guys. The Lions traded up for Terrion Arnold, which I didn't entirely get, but they did need a cornerback, so glad they got one. I think they probably could have just sat there and he would have been there, though, right?
Maybe. I mean, there were people that were mocking him up, you know, to like Denver and Oakland.
Las Vegas. But neither of those teams took him.
I know, but there were other teams that were probably willing to move
Dallas
up for Arnold.
No.
I think.
Packers, no. Buccaneers,
no. But I mean, other teams in the second round that were going to jump them, I think, is probably what the fear was.
Okay.
So Arnold was a pretty highly touted prospect here.
Takes a lot to go from second round into the low 20, the high-ish 20s. So, whatever. But I thought the process again was a little suspect for the Lions, but they got a guy. Any of these defensive players that you think realistically, matter and move the needle for you?
I'm sure people did their due diligence on Latu, but the injury stuff scares me, man. They medically retired the guy. We just saw, God, what's the name of the Cowboys? Van Der Esch?
Yes.
Am I thinking of the right one? Retire because of an injury, not the same injury, but I mean, that's scary to use a mid-round, first-round pick on somebody that you never know. I like Murphy a lot. I think I like him as a player. I like where he landed, but at the same time, there's a lot of traffic there. He's going to be like rotational. Like if he wants to get his name into the defensive rookie of the year conversation, it has to be making the most of his opportunities. Like we saw early in the year up in Philly and late in the year down in Houston, where, you know, both of those guys were not playing a ton of snaps. They were rotating in and out, but they were making the most of it when it mattered, obviously, in the latter one there. But he's a good fit there, especially with, you know, now you have a defensive-minded head coach. That's the guy they wanted. People have joked that it's like this is his, you know, Justin Matabuke, and honestly, there's some similarities there. So, McDonald's loved him. You know why you hated it? Because he didn't have it. And that's the draft nugget I have with this one. They came out and they said, they purposely didn't do a 30 visit with him. They said Schneider said they avoided any direct contact with him. They relied on a strong relationship with the agent to do all their diligence on Murphy. They really wanted him, and they avoided a 30 visit because they were worried other teams were going to snipe him on it. So, the thing is, you got Reed, you got Jones, you got some of the other guys. Like, it's going to be tough for him to maybe crack, and not crack the starting lineup because it'll be rotational, but like, it's going to be tough for him to get enough playing time, I think, to truly win an award. But if you're a player like this, I want to go play for a good defensive head coach.
Of course. Yeah, of course. And, yeah, I mean, if he's a difference maker, great. But like, the fuck did you trade for Leonard Williams for?
I don't know. The best teams, the best pass rushes, they throw waves at you. And yeah. I think I'm fine with it based on what they drafted the last couple of years.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I do like him. I like the fit, but they did say too, Schneider said this again. He said where they ended up, because like defense just wasn't coming off the board. They did think about trading back, but it turned into a fuck it. He's too good. Like we can't pass this guy up. So the fact that Schneider and, McDonald wanted him that bad that they didn't even take the calls really to trade back.
Yeah.
And I'll have to give him some benefit of the doubt because of the, like you make Matabuke that good. Fuck it.
Okay. Well, I wish Byron Murphy had been the first defensive player taken. That's all I'm going to tell you.
You know what I hate? That he's Byron Murphy the second. The other Byron Murphy, the corner, is Byron Murphy Jr.
Oh, really?
And then this one, thank God he's Byron Murphy the second and not Jr. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, there'd be two of them. That'd be terrible. It'd be
terrible to figure that out. All right. Well, I don't think any of these defensive players are going to make much of a difference this year, personally. And
Turner is landing in a spot where he's going to get time because that's just a massive need. And, Minnesota, it's one of those things, the calculus changes if you say, well, he probably should have been the eighth pick.
See the DROY favorite? He's got to be, right?
I haven't looked at the odds yet. I'm looking at him in the morning. I wanted to go into this without thinking too much about the prices.
He's got to be the favorite. Because like you said, he's taking over the
opportunity.
The opportunity is there. He's in a Brian Flores-led system. Like, he's gonna have some chances.
I would assume he's high up there. And yeah, I like Flores a lot. I said this last year. I said Flores, I'm excited for 2024 Flores when he actually gets some players. Mm. I'm pulling up Defensive Rookie of the Year right now. Your favorite
our lads is actually has Dallas Turner listed behind another player. Can you guess that player without looking? Dallas Turner is currently a second stringer and actually rotation, a pass rush specialist, if anything. Andrew Van Ginkle is the starter. He's listed as the starter right now.
At some point, Ivan Pace Jr. was a nice surprise. Andrew Van Ginkle, Byron Murphy, the other Byron Murphys on this team. They signed Jonathan Greenard. They signed Blake Cashman. They have Jerry Tillery. Like this is a team, and again, I'm assuming Flores had a big hand in those free agent moves. So if he's getting his guys together, he's assembling the team. This could be a fun year for this defense. And again, maybe that's a knock against Dallas Turner as the favorite. So he's not going to stand out on this team where he's rotating through and there's a lot of guys, getting the credit. We always talk about the credit when we talk about awards. It's the next guy that I like. And it's an offensive-minded head coach. It's a team that's, really predicated on their offense last year. But it has had some defensive players of the year on it. Jared Verse, the Rams. And a big part of why I like him, too, is, a lot of the scouting stuff has said he's good enough versus the run. And somebody even went too far as say, of all the edge rushers that were drafted, he's the one that I think is the best against the run.
Hmm.
And when that happens, you become a three-down player.
Three-down player.
You become a guy that they'll kick inside because he's big enough. You can play him over a guard, and then suddenly he gets some interior pressure. The fact that they drafted Kobe Turner and Byron Young, and maybe they just have good scouts because – you know, those guys have turned out pretty well. Obviously, Nacua is different. That's probably a different scout. But the scouting department seems to be on a heater right now. It was a huge need. So between the, you know, between the usage and the fact that he could be a three down player, he's like 11 to 1.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
High end speed, high end long arms. I don't hate this. And the trade up for Fisk was weird, but it's funny. Those, like, they drafted his buddy. So they have another a teammate of his on the team now, but what was it? This is another one where they said Verse met privately with the Rams that week. They didn't have formal meetings or workouts with the teams, and Snead said again it was intentional to keep it under the radar, which is driving me nuts from a draft betting standpoint. But it's good to know about the Rams and the Seahawks. Hmm. They're willing to lie. You know, it's a big knock on a quarterback that I don't think it's a big knock on a pass rusher.
What's that?
Being old.
Yes, right. That's true.
He's a little older, but for a pass rusher, I'm like, I'm happy about that. Yeah. He's grown into his big boy body.
There
he's
you got go.
Some man muscles.
I like it.
So I'm kind of high on Verse.
Okay. You sold me. I was worried about the Rams D with the absence of Aaron Donald. They were going to take a big downgrade for
it's
me.
It's not going to help. He's very good.
Yes. Okay. Let's, in summary, is it fair to say we expect relatively little of the quarterback class outside of Caleb Williams? We expect a lot out of the wide receiver class, but not enough to take over Williams' potential production. Tight tackles, running backs, no change in rating teams, defensive players, marginal expected impact by this defensive rookie class. Some of the pass rushers have some potential, especially the Verses of the world who are three down players. And maybe I'm going to kick the tires on what exactly Quinn Mitchell's role is going to be for the Eagles, because if the Eagles defense takes a giant step forward this year, it's going to be because they hit on that player.
Yeah, it's tough to differentiate, like, who gets the playing time. Obviously, Mitchell is the better player.
Well, he's going to be outside. DeJean is going to play nickel. Yeah, DeJean, the chances for picks, for splash plays is going to go to Mitchell, I would guess.
Well, I like DeJean too, if they decide to do, and I don't know their
return guy,
if he's the alignments well guy. Enough, but you do that inverted. Well, you do that inverted too, where suddenly your corner is playing safety. DeJean lets you do that. He can play all over the place. He's a bit of a Swiss Army knife. So, yeah, like we said, that's
how did the Eagles.
That's
do
a great
this?
Pick. Nate Wiggins for Baltimore. I know they lost their DC, but it's still a good team. It's still a good head coach. Like, that's one too. You never know with these corners. Over the last few years, that was like a rule 3-4 years ago, maybe, where it's really hard for some of these corners to succeed early. But we've seen it year in and year out, where some of these young corners have really transitioned to the NFL a lot faster. So, like, Nate Wiggins on a good team, Terry and Arnold on a good team, Quinion Mitchell on a good team, Kool-Aid McKinstry, not so much a good team, but like Kamari Lassiter. That Texans team, just because they need so much help back there. Like, that's a fun one. I was not enamored with what Green Bay has done from a scouting standpoint defensively sometimes, but Edgerrin Cooper's a guy a lot of people like as a, you know, linebacker edge guy that went there. We'll see what the playing time looks like.
Okay. All right, well, let's wrap it up here. I got to pack. I'm heading to the East Coast again. Travel never ends. And this was good to kind of wet the whistle for the NFL. I'm excited to dive into this more in the offseason and really kind of get ready. We're going to have scheduled next week, which is fun. We'll talk some tennis. We'll talk some basketball as we get closer to the end of the to the big events here. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this little bit of a breakdown on post-draft thoughts.
Boom. Who won the draft? Who gave you A+?
Philadelphia.
Yeah, probably fucking Eagles.
Philadelphia and Bears are probably co-winners, I would say.
Yeah, you know when you should give these grades, like, at the end of the year.
Yeah,
we'll
right.
We'll do our draft grades in January, guys. We'll see you then.
I guess here you go. You ready? If the answer is whose title equity went up the most thanks to draft day, it was co-favorites for me between Philly and Chicago. Chicago would have gotten more, but they're in a very crowded division. I think Philly set themselves up clearly as the best team in the East right now, which is huge for them. So they win.
Yeah, Bears won the draft a year early.
Yeah, that's a true fair point. But
Fonzilla says Bears won the draft when the Panthers drafted Bryce. Yeah. What a coup. For Chicago Bears, congrats. Yeah. Because if you're a Bulls, White Sox, Blackhawks fan,
it's been
a bleak. I mean, I get it. There's some fun young players. Connor Bedard's great, but it'd be nice to see some wins. So I'm kind of rooting for a team I grew up hating in the Bears this year to do something.
Gonna be tough. NFC North is very crowded. All right, let's wrap it up. Best of luck and enjoy the week. I mean, I can see the Bears pushing anywhere from first to fourth, right?
Just a quick update. The Pacers are up by 10 at half.
Yeah, it's
okay. And New York was a 4.5-point favorite. So that's 14.5 against the spread. They're down.
The Knicks are down to 6 players. This is a problem. It's what we in the business call a problem.
A problem.